You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
10 November. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters, Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Trading Northam is a kind of scooped obby platform, implants and telecom results. The market didn't like any of that. Dr. Martin Davies from Deloitte, looking ahead to the midterm budget policy statement, which will be delivered by our new finance minister tomorrow afternoon. And then Dina Zoccolo from Westbrook Alternative Asset Management, looking at alternative assets as an uncorrelated part of a portfolio, and particularly when we've got these high equity valuations. Show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Some morning headlines, MoneyWeb. The rate of increase in new vehicle prices is dropping, albeit consumers looking to trade in older vehicles still find dealers willing to pay top dollar for quality cars. So improving, but slowly. Business Day, Competition Commission inquiry told us supplier frustration with Takealot. Unhappy sellers describing lack of support and a returns policy nightmare. Morning markets, lots of red. The US saw the S&P off a third of a percent, Nasdaq down 0.7. In Asia, we've got Sydney down 0.1 and Tokyo off a third as well. Commodities mixed overnight, gold a bit better, 1,827. Brent, a whole lot stronger, surprised me, 85.25 a barrel. Rand, 15.09. Top 40 opening call, about 230 points to the red. That's just under 0.4%. And that is 10 cent trades up 2.1% in Hong Kong.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Tony and I with Jimmy Moyoha, independent analyst. Jimmy, I appreciate the early morning time. I mentioned that Northam kind of scooping on implants. If we go back, what was it, 2 weeks ago when Implats said they were in talks with Royal Buffer King Platinum, that kind of made sense. It's the same seam. They're neighbors to each other. But that got scuppered. Northam swooped in. I don't know. It makes a lot less sense. The market wasn't convinced and certainly priced Northam off 15% on the day. Your take on sort of commodity miners doing deals at tops of market?
Morning, Simon. You know what? I think with deals like this, if you look at the pattern that we've sort of seen emerge, is we've seen a lot of companies sort of be strategic about their placements and their acquisitions. You know what I mean? So while Implats would have been seen as a better view mm-hmm. from a market perspective, guys like Northam are following the footsteps of Sibanye. I mean, Sibanye went after nickel mine in Brazil. So you're definitely seeing a shift where it relates to acquisitions mm-hmm. and expansion, but also in particular in relation to why Northam's doing this as a player in the EV space. The same reason Sibanye did it on the nickel mine. We know platinum's a huge metal in the electric vehicle space, and they're basically putting all of their eggs in that basket in terms of future growth. I mean, it might not make sense now financially for Northam because they said they're going to issue some shares to raise the capital for that. The minority shareholders that are on RB Platts' side are not happy about the deal as well because they're excluded from this. Northam's paying more than a 50% premium on the stock price. So all of those factors don't seem to make sense. But if you look at the fact that now Northam's increasing their BEE profile and that long-term play on the EV space, I think for them, they're saying that, yes, it might not make sense right now, but I mean, look at it 5, 10, 15 years from now, which is how the mining space works anyway. If you're one of the key players in the platinum space, and that's going to be a key component in the electric vehicles, you're setting yourself up fairly well. So maybe it's worth paying the premium in their eyes at this stage.
Yeah, I take your point there. You know, the market is looking ahead to, you know, lunchtime. You're saying, hang on a second, raise your eyes. There's a bigger story here that plays out over the years. I like your point on Sibanye. Some deals that didn't make a lot of sense at the time have paid out very well. Next, move to Telkom. Results out, revenue flat, mobile doing well, BCX a little bit weaker, profits overall, however, up. But again, the market just not impressed with Telkom results. And I got to say, it's a stock I've been liking. They got the towers business to unbundle. Their mobile's looking quite good. Market disagreed.
Do you know what? I'm on your side of this one, Simon. I think the market sort of dissected a bit of certain elements of the information. So, I mean, the BCX revenue, of course, that's down. They're looking to now go outside of South Africa to raise strategic partnerships mm-hmm. for it and that sort of thing. I think CapEx being up 22%, fiber CapEx being up 297%, but fiber revenues coming in fairly low. I mean, they've increased their home base in terms of guys that are on fiber. I think the main concern around this and why everyone wasn't too happy about it was, although half year profits were up, earnings before interest and tax was up, we are expecting headline earnings per share to be up. Revenue wasn't growing. Revenue yeah. remained flat. So yes, you managed to strategically get your business better. You managed to reduce operating costs and improve operating efficiencies. But if your revenue is not growing, there's an area of concern. We do know, of course, the CEO is stepping out. Mm-hmm. But I think that Sarame, the incoming CEO is a good fit. I mean, he's the reason their mobile division is where it is. Their mobile division was one of their best performing divisions. It grew its customer base by 18.8%. The mobile division is looking to compete directly with the likes of Vodacom's and Telkom's in addition to the masts and towers division once they can get that sort of delisted there. I'm liking Telkom as well. I mean, it's sitting at 46 Rand a share. It's come off of 20 Rand a share lows. Yeah. If they can get everything done right strategically. I mean, we saw, 195 Rand highs in 2007 pre the financial crisis. Uh-huh. So if they can get a couple of things right, I think Telkom could be a good long-term hold. Yeah, I'm with you on this.
Yeah, and I take your point. Spending the capex, not getting the revenue might spook the market, but I don't know. To me, I think the market perhaps was a little bit knee-jerk. We'll leave that there. Chatting with independent analyst Jimmy Moyaha. Appreciate the early morning time.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com. or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Joining now with Dr. Martin Davies. He is Managing Director, Emerging Markets in Africa at Deloitte. Martin, appreciate the early morning time. We've got the midterm budget policy statement from our new finance minister tomorrow. There's a lot to talk around it, although it's typically a fairly short statement from the minister. I suppose the big deal is it looks like they're going to get a fair tax windfall, thanks to commodity prices, about 160 billion. How does he spend this? I mean, that's quite a nice little bit of extra cash for your first budget statement.
So good morning, Simon. It's not that early, but thank you for having me. just some views. I think there was an interesting article I read in the FT, and there's a challenge here. We're not using the A word, austerity, but caution is probably the more sort of accurate approach here. But we're seeing many stakeholders talking about a need for stimulus. But the article in the FT I read a week or two ago was talking very interesting about how those countries in the last year or so, emerging markets that have stimulated, mm-hmm. are in the worst position now. This can be backfired. Think Hungary, think Brazil, think Philippines. And often it talks about, and this is a challenge for South Africa, it's not about the spend per se, it's the quality of the spend. And that's the challenge we have as a country. If people talk about stimulus, that's fine, but exactly what will you be stimulating? And for me, that is really the issue is for the relatively new finance minister is how do we improve the quality of spend in our country while at the same time being very cognizant of debt levels, which could result in being punished by the market going forward.
Yeah, I take your point in that. It's one thing to have the money. It's another thing to promise to spend it and even to spend it. But it's how it gets spent. That's what matters. And are we able to actually sort of get our bang for our buck for that 160 million? And you mentioned debt levels. Earlier this year, we recalibrated our GDP, which essentially said that the number was higher. And this isn't a smoke and mirrors. This is, as I understand, something that economies the world over do every sort of 5 years or decade or so. Does that give us extra wiggle room? If I GDP suddenly was, I don't know, it was a couple of percentage points higher, that makes our debt look nicer, but that doesn't really change the picture. I mean, it's almost, it's window dressing. Does that appease markets at anyone, or is it still a case of we're looking at debt to GDP levels and are frankly concerned?
I think we've become somewhat obsessed with debt to GDP level, and that's maybe in recent years is not a bad thing. I think, you know, what the key issue for me now really is saying we're looking at, you know, the windfall you mentioned, is it sustainable? Yes, mining the windfalls from mining companies have been high. We really depend on two things: the commodities. Are we in the beginning of the commodity super cycle, which is certainly underpin our growth for, you know, medium long term going forward?
Mm-hmm.
The issue is, firstly, will Chinese growth remain robust? And secondly, will the energy transition globally result in critical minerals in this part of the world remaining very high going forward, providing continuous tailwind for commodity driven economies? That's particularly economies in Central and Southern Africa. Africa being one of them. But let's not bank on that. We can't safely bet that this windfall is going to continue. I think for me, though, we're saying, looking at stimulus, and just keeping on this point for a second, the greatest stimulus I think we could get is actually for free, and that's called structural reform.
Yeah.
How do we start to crowd in private capital? We're seeing glimmers of it in renewable energy. As the liberalization takes place, then private capital will flow where it's most needed. And there's this talks around how state-owned enterprises are allowing private capital effectively through liberalization to invest in critical infrastructure in our country. And that is for free. It isn't a budget item. We see that renewable energy is, you know, we're talking 100 megawatts, whatever it may be, being liberalized. We need to see that in other parts of infrastructure, think ports, think railways, you know, and the like. And then you'll see what we're seeing, which is woefully low in this country, gross fixed capital formation spend increased dramatically through private capital. And guess what? As I said, it's for free.
Yeah, I like that. You know, some structural reforms, you know, no cost. You just, you know, you make some reforms, things happen. A quick last question. Of course, the big issue, which the minister doesn't have a lot about, and a big hindrance, is Eskom. I mean, we're in load shedding, stage four, stage three, stage two, wherever it is. I mean, that hurts economies. It particularly hurts the smaller parts of the economy because, you know, the big, the mining houses, the corporates, they can sort of go off grid, but the small mom and pops, not so much.
Again, this is dramatic, I think, in the word. The need for urgency and you know, the engineering competence of an ESCOM to be able to fix this challenge is certainly dire, the situation. We need to fix it urgently. This is, you know, we talked about a just transition in terms of energy.
Mm-hmm.
We are seeing globally in certain economies, I think China is seeing erratic supplies of energy. This is not from an engineering failure. This is from a transition that will ultimately start to accelerate in other countries, a transition away from traditional carbon power to, you know, power generation towards more, you know, renewable sources, green sources and the like. That transition will not be smooth. In South Africa's case, we still have not even got anywhere near that yet. It's an engineering challenge. It's not an energy transition challenge. So suffice to say, if we want to remain a true emerging market with reasonably high aspirations of GDP growth, we need to fix this urgently. And I think for me, the Treasury, it's quite surprising, but certainly noble, that the Treasury in our country, Ministry of Finance, is actually at the lead of structural reform in our country. This should not just be coming, the sentiment and policy and practice should not just be coming from Treasury. It should be coming from many other ministries as well in the process.
Yeah, I take your point. It's an engineering challenge. I saw an image yesterday of our transmission lines across South Africa, and it's all focused where the coal is. Now we need to focus it to where the sun is. That on itself is going to be a huge challenge. It's an engineering challenge. Dr. Martin Davies, Managing Director, Emerging Markets in Africa at Deloitte, appreciate the time this morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlip.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlip Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Sitting now with Dineo Sokolo. He's head of product development and distribution, Westbrook Alternative Asset Management. Dineo, appreciate the early morning time. We've chatted before alternative assets, although back in the day it was all about the Section 12J, which, not to be disparaging, kind of sucked all the air out of the room around it. That's now been sunsetted. What sort of investments are we talking about when we look at or talk around alternative assets?
Yeah, morning, Simon. Thanks for having me, and morning to everyone listening. I mean, you're 100% right, Simon. Section 12J did take a lot of the airtime previously, but the reality is that the world of alternatives is a far larger investment ecosystem than just Section 12J. In fact, if you look in the first world, you know, there are providers like Blackstone and KKR and Brookfield who are very, very large that provide a vast array of alternatives to clients, and Section 12J doesn't even exist in other economies. What are alternatives, Simon? Well, simply put, I think a good way of describing them is that there's a wide spectrum. It starts with what I like to refer to as private market versions of traditional assets, and it goes all the way to slightly more interesting stuff. So what do I mean by private market versions of traditional assets? Well, we're used to talking about cash and equities and bonds. Mm-hmm. But what happens if instead of buying a bond, you made a loan to a company directly, or instead of buying a listed REIT stock, you made a direct property acquisition? That really is what alternatives are. It's the mechanism in which you acquire them, and generally they're unlisted, they're illiquid, and as a consequence, they are portfolio diversifiers for clients. They allow you to generate returns that don't necessarily track what the traditional markets do, mm-hmm. and they can also be more tax efficient, and in many instances, they can give you a bit of an asymmetric return relative to the amount of risk you take.
You mentioned two words, they're unlisted, illiquid, which usually, you know, for someone who's used to investing in an exchange, is like, oh, don't like that, that is scary. It's actually a benefit to unlisted and illiquid, is that you mentioned the uncorrelation returns, and also potentially around valuations. I mean, you know what you're getting into, but this can be an important part of a portfolio.
You got it. So, I mean, you know, it's the age old debate. You hold a share in a listed equity. Let's say it's a REIT. Mm. Interest rates move. And now the valuation of your stock has dropped by 10, 15, 20%. That valuation change might not have anything to do with the actual underlying inherent value of your investment. Now, that's one of the disadvantages of being liquid and listed, is that you're subject to price changes that may or may not have anything to do with your investment. They might have to do with macroeconomic considerations. Mm-hmm. In alternatives, mm-hmm. your returns are far more driven by the actual fundamentals of that particular investment. And so, I mean, if you look at take-up rates, Simon, I think it's very interesting. In South Africa, we're a little bit behind the curve. The evidence here locally is anecdotal. But, you know, based on conversations I've had with a lot of our wealth managers who allocate to us at Westbrook, you know, South Africans, even the high net worth South Africans, are somewhere between 0 and 10% invested on an overall portfolio basis into alternatives. If you look at the offshore experience, I mean, this is research coming out of UBS and Blackstone. Mm-hmm. Institutions, on average, 22% allocation to alternatives. Family offices, 35%.
Wow.
And to take it to an extreme, if one looked at, for example, the Yale University Endowment, 75% of their investment allocation goes into alternatives. There's a reason for that.
And the reason is that sort of that uncorrelated and valuations. You mentioned it. I mean, on the one side, you mentioned when interest rates are moving, suddenly your REIT goes down. The other side of the coin is that when suddenly we see valuations getting massively stretched, you know, I think Tesla is an example out there, but this is less likely to happen in that unlisted, illiquid alternative space.
Yeah, you got it. I mean, we've got a lot of clients at the moment who are recycling equities into some of the alternatives that we offer, for example, private debt. And the considerations are exactly what you just mentioned. I think a lot of people are concerned that equities have run hard, mm-hmm. that equity valuations potentially are a little bit high, even maybe too high. And as a consequence, they're looking for portfolio diversifiers to protect them against what they fear might be future downswings. And that, again, is where alternatives are valuable. Yes, they're locked up and liquid, but it does prevent that that behavior that we see in the market all too often, where people tend to buy high and unfortunately sell low.
Yeah, I take your point on that. We'll leave it there. Dina Sokola, Head Product Development Distribution, Westbrook Alternative Asset Management. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for the show. The question we are asking on our Twitter and LinkedIn, we've got that midterm budget policy statement tomorrow. What are your expectations? An extra 150, 160 billion in extra tax revenue. What do you think he should or would or could be doing with it? Have your vote, have your say. Yesterday we were asking you about construction. We certainly see energy infrastructure build demand rising. We saw good numbers out of Rabex. It was pretty evenly split between people who were already investing into construction, that included me, folks who say, no, not for you at all, far too cyclical, and others who perhaps were waiting maybe for some more evidence or a better entry point. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7 a.m. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Nabokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contribution. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.